for our Secretary of State and our Board of Directors to be on that Equitable Savings and Loan Board. They're going to be able to serve with a very experienced politician, Mr. Appling, former Secretary of State. Serve with Harold Cake, who's the brother of Ralph Cake, former National Committee man for the Republican Party of Oregon. Have the opportunity to serve with the attorney for Equitable Savings and Loan, who's also on the board, with the president of Pendleton Woolen Mills, president of Medford Corporation, president of Idaho Power, and the president of the University of Oregon. Really going to make some fine contacts, meet some very nice people. But here again, in this port situation, the port is again in the same situation that the Board of Control is. The port has the right to make deposits in savings and loan companies. Now that can cut both ways. I'm not going to suggest that the fact that these two men, one of whom is my very good friend and a classmate in law school, Bill Love, the fact that they're going to be directors on the port is going to influence them to make deposits of port funds at Equitable Savings and Loan. Maybe the result will be that they'll decide not to deposit the money at Equitable Savings and Loan, even though that's where we could get the best rate of interest. They might be between the devil and the deep blue sea, because they can't serve in the interests of all of the people of Oregon without someone quite properly questioning whether or not they are not, in fact, serving their own interests as directors of Equitable Savings and Loan. I think this whole thing stinks. And it's probably a nice thing that it happened now, right in the wake of our discussion a week ago about the Ethics Commission and whether we should allow the lobbyists to spend $40 a day instead of $25 a day, which they acknowledge they want because they don't want people to know that they're buying me or Senator over here or someone else dinner. They just don't want that known. I think we ought to re-examine our basic premises. Is it really all that proper to have continuing and regular interlocking directorates between major financial institutions that are regulated by the state of Oregon and by official state boards? Are these various major corporations, such as the savings and loan establishments, the banks, and the power companies, are they regulated by us, or are we regulated by them? Is the state of Oregon the sovereign state, or is the state of Oregon and its various subsidiary corporations working for the best interest of PPNL, PGE, Equitable, and so on? Members of the Senate, I'd like to have us take a good hard look at this, and I think it's time that we quit being so pompous about it and saying that I can take a lobbyist X can buy me a $100 dinner, or I can be put on the board of directors at the Oregon Trail Savings and Loan, and this will not in any way affect my decision. That's a bunch of baloney, and we all know it, and it's time we faced it.
Senator Thorne, under the proposition of remonstrances.
Thank you, Mr. President. I feel a responsibility, Mr. President, as a result of some things that have gone on in Washington, D.C. recently, to just make a comment or two. It has to do with the fact that many farmers have congregated there with their tractors and have engaged in a protest where demonstrations and violence apparently are part of the act. I don't necessarily rise to support that kind of an effort, but I do think there's a message which ought to be enunciated here at this level. Mr. President, many people speak of the question of full parity. Farmers, I guess best understand that as a measure whereby they receive a standing or an equal amount of income commensurate with other segments of our society. But more specifically, Mr. President, I think there's a clear message that's being delivered, and that is simply this, that agriculture is a very sporadic type of industry. There isn't a year when all segments of the industry survive equally as well. In addition to that, Mr. President, the agricultural community, I believe, is one of the few supply-demand type industries that we have left in this country. When prices are up, farmers are encouraged to produce more, and when prices drop, farmers produce less. And consequently, the supply-demand price situation tends to react. During, Mr. President, the 1972-73 year, all of us know that grain prices went to record levels, nearly twice what they are today. Mr. President, during that period of time, many young farmers, and I think this probably is one of the really severe problems that plague us all, were enticed and encouraged to participate in the agricultural arena. Now those same people are faced with high debts and high mortgages, and consequently see no other alternative but to, in a moment of frustration, rebel as they are doing. During 1978, agriculture fared very well. But the problem is, Mr. President, that the debts that farmers face collectively are the highest they've ever been in our history. A higher percentage of value, total value, is tied up in farm debt. And we can say that farmland is increasing in value, and that creates a greater equity, and we can borrow more money. But the problem is that that also creates the problem of having to service those debts. Mr. President, farmers don't want to sell their land necessarily. They want to be able to maintain ownership and farm it and produce. I don't agree with violence as a way of conveying a message. Unfortunately, we're living in a time when that seems to be.
They expressed their view. The property owner very often has his view. And right now, the division finds itself in the middle trying to find a way, if it's possible, to meet both views and accomplish this, everybody's goal. Sometimes it's not possible, sometimes it is. And Stan's getting gray down here at the end of the table because he's responsible for the permit program, trying to find that middle ground.
Governor, I did not mean to imply that either one of these gentlemen have not treated us all as fairly, because they have. But it still makes us nervous about what might come later on, because they won't always be there.
That's good. I hate to bring this pleasant meeting to a close. If anyone wants to say a few words in their own behalf before we close, you can. This is a good opportunity. Uh-oh. Yes, sir. Would you identify yourself, please?
I'm Mark Thomas, County Assessor. And I think we've kind of skipped, let me follow up with what Judge Hayes was saying, and that is whether the state land actually seals or claiming complete exemption. Let's say submerged lands that are being used.
Complete exemption?
Tax exemption.
We are. Exemption. If it's state-owned lands, it's not going to be taxed.
May I ask Mr. Johnson a question? Well, I understand that Portland would have the same problem that you have in Clatsop County if they did not tax in a different way. And that I understand they tax on waterfront advantage per square foot. Why don't you do that in Clatsop County?
On the square foot?
Mm-hmm. Why don't you tax, solve your problem with the state of Oregon like Portland does?
On the front foot.
Uh-huh.
On the front foot.
Mm-hmm.
It seems equitable.
Well, I mean, I don't understand why. In the state, we control or own lands in the Port Portland area. And because of their method of taxation, they've not been presented with the same problem that you've been presented with, and I don't think it's just because Astoria is smaller. So historically, why haven't you done what Portland has done to help alleviate your problem?
I think that when you move into Portland and you are moving into Astoria, that they're going to.
Well, I can't understand that, because I would think that we would already know about it. We have moved in. As a matter of fact, there are more improvements made in the Portland area than there are. You change your method of assessment?
One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four. I wonder why this thing isn't working anymore. One, two, three, four.
Water helps with your headlights. It has a building on it. It gets very hard to put value on that 15 feet to cover on up to compensate for the total value of land covered by piling. Buildings are.
Well, I know that you've been in to see me a couple of times, and since I'm the new member on the board, I assume that you've been meeting with the other members and raising this as a question over a period of time. And it seems to me it should be obvious to you that we're not going to solve your problem by saying that we will not claim ownership. We've made a very strong statement that we are going to continue to claim our ownership in those lands. Therefore, it seems to me it's incumbent upon you as the assessor to change your method of taxation. Something is what Portland's done. And if it's any help to you, I'd be happy to go to, with you to John Lobdell, but.
Okay.
John,
yes, sir.
I would like to make one more comment.
We would appreciate you identifying yourself for our records.
Carl Elving, our firm name is the Offutt Terrace Development Corporation. We are concerned with waterfront development. What I'm concerned about, and I like the governor, I will probably never have another chance to meet you like this. I appreciate you being down here. I think what I'm saying is going to mean something. I think there are many ways to destroy the value of land. By denying permits could be one way. If it's just by still deny the usage of the land where it's not available to be used. Also, you can deny natural waterfront usage from becoming very valuable, very productive economically, many jobs created. You can do it by the height of your bridges, like Salisbury Harbor or Celeste. The bridge is too low. Fixed concrete, beautiful bridge, but too low. The clearances are not adequate. And the State Highway Commission can come in and get a line cut and contract for the bridge up in the Cumber River. I don't know too much of the details. Again, I question that the height of that bridge is proper to serve the barline shoreline areas that you have concern with. And I understand that you are attracted to the shoreline of the submerged land. And if you kill the value of that area, the vessels can't reach it because the bridge clearances are not adequate. So I've been to the State Highway Department, the State Transportation Department, the Marine Board, and I've had letters going to their offices. And I've been to ex-Governor McCall's office when he was receiving a plaque for protecting the estuaries of Oregon. And time, I'm concerned with bridge clearances in the state highway is does not have a policy like California wants to have a better policy to go by. Bridge clearances, if you're going to have a fixed bridge, you cannot open. So I would like, and this is Steve Falcon's suggestion, he enlarged on mine, and I liked it. He said it shouldn't just be the state of Oregon, it should be all the coastal states. I mean, I think
the investigation of other agencies that are trying to determine whether damage is done to human life or to animal life as a result of the use of this
approach. Dictate being careful of the life first, then determining what's happening, and then if it's shown that it is safe, then considering spraying, not spraying first and then determining if it's safe.
The spray has been used for 25 years And to, now, wait a minute, let me have my say. And to my knowledge, and what I've been able to read, they have never found conclusive evidence that the use of the spray has caused harm to individuals. Now, this doesn't mean that it doesn't.
It doesn't cause harm.
We put chemicals in our drinking water.
Well,
if there's any doubt at all, how can we do this?
We have very close controls on the use of this spray that I've worked out with.
There is doubt about the safety of it, is there not?
There is 200-foot strip on either side of every stream.
BLM, in their report, wrote that they couldn't keep it out of the water no matter what the strip was. We have that evidence that was written by BLM.
It goes down into the water supply.
The average over the entire district.
Well, okay. All I can tell you is that I'm watching this thing very closely. I'm going to be as cautious as I can. But as of now, I feel that these herbicides are a necessary arm of good forest management in the state of Oregon.
You don't live in Allegheny.
Now, one at a time. One
you
at
don't
time.
Live
no,
in Allegheny.
I know. I appreciate that.
You don't drink the water in Allegheny.
I appreciate that.
You're in
that.
Salem. You have city water out of where it comes from. We drink
that.
The water.
I realize that. Okay,
Andrew
I don't.
Since there is. All over you? I have.
No, I wouldn't like that.
Well, I have. Right up here within 4 miles.
Okay. Goodbye.
Required to live where it's being sprayed. If everybody else is going to be subjected to the sprays, why shouldn't the officials be?
I have another one. This was handed to me just a short time ago, and I'm not sure what it's all about, but it's from the weather office, and it said, we've just had a report of an impending severe storm in the Roseburg area. Does anyone here have any information on what all this is about?
Chairman, don't have any official word, but there must be an awful storm coming. You've probably read in the papers in months past to the Mountain Evil Goat to predict the weather going up and down the mountain. Well, we just found one wandering down Highway 42. When you get down as far as Coos Bay, it must be a terrible storm in Roseburg. And Governor, as long as you're going back to Roseburg on the way to Salem, would you take the goat back?
Oh my God, they've got a goat. They've got a goat.
Don't let Roseburg get your goat, Governor.
Well, it's always a lively time in Coos Bay, and lots of unexpected things can happen here. Well, ladies and gentlemen, to keynote our annual meeting, we are honored indeed to have the Chief Executive of the State of Oregon. And as I've already indicated, before the Governor arrived, he is well known in Washington and has a very close friend in the White House. He is also well known and respected by his colleagues in the Governor's Conference, where he is known as an articulate and able spokesman for Oregon and for the West. He has shown a keen awareness of the resource issues which are so important to Oregon and to our nation. We in the industry know him as a friend. Everybody in public office has a certain style. And I think Governor Straub has brought a certain enthusiasm to Salem that has been indicative in many of the programs that his administration has brought about. He's particularly proud, and I think the entire state of Oregon is particularly proud of what he's done in putting together the Willamette Greenway Plan, which is one of the landmark pieces of land use planning in the nation. The administration has also done a great deal to preserve sound land use planning in Oregon. And I guess most notably, to a group of foresters, he's a governor who's worked hard to achieve a balance between Oregon's quality environment, which, believe me, coming from Washington, D.C., I didn't know how much I missed your quality environment, and the economic progress of this state. Now, of course, being governor, he's well known throughout the state. And I know that personally because I was in Klamath Falls several months ago and happened to run into a guy I know who's working on the governor's campaign. And he said, Art, I'm going down to work one of the shopping centers here. Why don't you come with me? So I did. And the first guy he saw, this friend of mine, walked up to him and he said, good morning, sir. He said, are you going to vote for Bob Straub for governor? And this fellow just grinned and he says, oh, you bet I am. My whole family's going to vote for Bob Straub. Well, you know, this pleased my friend no end. He just beamed. He said, well, that's great. Tell me, why are you voting for Bob Straub? And the guy sure is, well, I'll tell you why. Because we got to get rid of the guy that's in there now. Ladies and gentlemen, it's indeed an honor. The guy who is in there now, the Honorable Robert Straub, the governor of Oregon.
Thank you very much, Art Smith, for those nice words and that kind introduction. Gene Stoltenberg, Ed Schroeder, Wes Sullivan, one of the members of the State Board of Forestry, others attending this Columbia River section of the American Foresters. I'm very pleased to be here, and I'm very thankful and lucky to have made it through the sidewalk barricades that greeted me as I came to the Thunderbird. I want to tell you, Art, that if Emily Ashworth is interested in debating with me at the south end of the chip pile, that I'd much rather debate her there than up in her hot air balloon. She has devised the most interesting gimmick for a political trick that I have witnessed in all the years of my campaigning, and I take off my hat to her. And in fact, she's invited me to go for a ride with her, and I've declined because I can see that hot air balloon taking off and her jumping out and leaving me in it to go drifting out over the Pacific Ocean. I care very strongly about the work that you people are doing, and I care very much about the importance of forestry in the state of Oregon. It is second to none in meaningfulness to the employment picture of this great state. I don't tell you people anything you don't know when I say that we've got to gear up and ratchet up to a higher level the degree of management that we apply on our forest lands. This applies to all forest lands, all type of ownerships, and I intend to work as hard at this as I can. I'm going to have the opportunity this afternoon to be with the president. And I'm not telling you that to brag, but to tell you that that I'm going to ride with him from the airport into downtown Portland to the Benson Hotel. And as soon as that door closes, I'm going to turn to him and I'm going to start talking about the need for intensive forest management on the federally owned forest lands in Oregon. I know that Dick Worthington could do a much, much better job and would be a much more satisfied director of Region 6 if he had the kind of personnel and had the kind of financing that he knows is needed to do an intensive job on these lands. The land is our life in Oregon. All living things begin and end on the land. The way we live in relation to it, to its rivers and valleys and forests, will determine the character and quality of not only our lives, but those of all the generations to come after us. I don't need to tell this audience that our land is under great stress and that we must plan to use it wisely. I don't need to dwell for this group on the fact that the Buter Report predicts a 22% decline in forest production in Western Oregon by the end of this century. Most of you know these figures and their consequences as well as I do. And I'm sure most of you know that one-third of our economy in Oregon grows out of the timber industry, 46% of our total manufacturing payroll, and almost 90,000 jobs. For the third year in a row here in Oregon, timber-related payrolls totaled over $1 billion from industries based on forest resources. Anything that affects our forest affects our livelihood. And I want to tell you as an aside that I recognize the severity of the concern that many people have over the use of herbicides in managing our forest lands. I just had a discussion with the picketers out front to talk to them my views on why I felt 245T should continue to be used in forest management in the state of Oregon, but I know that I got nowhere. I respect the views of these people who are out front, as well as the views of a growing number of people in our society who have grave concerns and serious doubts about the continued use of this herbicide. And I'm anxious that we use this herbicide with the greatest precaution and the greatest care that it is possible to do so. I've worked with Ed Schroeder, and Ed Schroeder has developed some standards which increase the control of the application of this herbicide. And I'm very pleased that Dick Worthington and the Forest Service has seen fit to adopt these standards in their own applications. As I'm sure you know, we're having a growth boom in Oregon that is unrivaled in recent history, with the single exception of World War II, when our shipyards brought thousands here in the national defense effort. We've grown by 300,000 people since 1970, at rates far greater than those of our neighbors in Washington and California. We are one of the fastest growing states in the nation. Since 1970, we've had 240,000 births against 145,000 deaths, a net increase of births over deaths of 95,000 people since 1970. But during that same period, we've also had 210,000 people come in on Highway 80N and I-5. And they're still coming, and they're going to continue to come. Like it or not, and we might as well try to learn to live with it, if not like it, by the end of this century, we expect to add another 1 million people to the population in Oregon. I don't like this, and I know that many of you people do, but I claim and maintain and insist that there's nothing that we can do about it, except to see to it that we manage that growth so it doesn't destroy the beauty and the quality of life here in the state of Oregon. We look forward to a lot of growth, a lot of strain on our economy, and a lot of reasons for working together more closely than we ever have in the past. I know that planning is a dirty word in many sectors of our society, and I've always believed, I've been a strong believer in Jefferson's words, that government is best which governs least. But on the other hand, I've seen Los Angeles and the awful sprawl of that open marketplace. I've seen Phoenix and Tucson, where growth is an ugly blight that spreads across the countryside. I've seen the East and all the ugliness of its unplanned growth. I've seen those places, and I've heard their desperate cries for clean water, clean air, and open spaces. And then I come back and I look at Oregon, and I know our blessings in this great state. I've also read the histories of those parts of this country where the forests were mined instead of farmed, where the timber industry collapsed when the old growth timber was cut down in a short span of time. I've read those histories, and once again, I count our blessings in this great state of Oregon. Our forests here in the Pacific Northwest were the last to be reached. Fortunately, national forests were established at the turn of the century, thus preserving our trees from the unplanned harvests that played such havoc with the great forests of the East, the Midwest, and the South. Here in Oregon, our private timber companies are working hard at the intensive management of their forest lands. And I say that we're lucky in Oregon to have such high caliber private commercial timberland owners or industrial owners that we have. But even that management will not allow us to avoid the economic dislocation that will come about if the 22% decline predicted by Buter is not compensated for in some other way. I want to make clear that I will oppose overcutting of our national forests to make up for past overcutting on private lands. In my opinion, the non-declining even flow policy holds our strongest promise for long-range forest production stability in Oregon. Our regional forester, Dick Worthington, said in a recent Portland Chamber speech that he believes it possible to grow and sell one-third more timber volume on the national forests of the Northwest if he had the funds and the personnel to do an intensive forestry job. And I think that one of my main jobs is to see to it that he gets those funds and that personnel. Dick says that we can do this by applying intensive forestry techniques that we have long known how to use. But he said we must also use intensive management on a much grander scale than we have in the past. To do that, the Forestry Department must have budget and manpower sufficient to the task. In March, I had the opportunity to take office of Management and Budget Assistant Director Elliot Cutler on a flying tour of the Oregon Cascade Range to give him a chance to observe the need for more intensive management of our forests. I strongly urged him to increase the money for the manpower that we need to manage these lands effectively. I have Cutler's word that in the budgeting process for 1980, OMB will seriously consider increasing those funds to meet our needs. I realize. That we have in the state of Oregon applying here. Assistant Secretary of Agriculture Rupert Cutler, not to be confused with Elliot Cutler, announced last Friday that the U.S. Forest Service will comply with the applicant standards. Understand the importance of this chemical as a tool, as a valuable reforestation tool. But I insist that it is vitally important that every precaution be taken, both by public and private timberland operators, to protect the public health and to use this chemical with great caution. The Office of Management and Budget and the Council of Environmental Quality. I wrote the president on April 7th. Personnel on our lands. I'm concerned that without provision for adequate levels of forest management, increases in harvest today will adversely impact future harvests on which our economy must depend. In addition, I encourage the president not to consider increasing harvest and improving forest management as only a temporary measure, but to conduct a long-term plan of increased harvest to a national commitment to increased and improved forest management. Another step that I've long advocated to avoid a shortage of timber is the coordination of the schedule between the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. The single most effective solution and the most difficult problem that we have to deal with, which is only a part of our problem, is to get to 3.5 million acres of as full and as fast as possible. Made up of interested parties who work with the problem, who will work with a small woodlot management. This is chaired by the data, the leader of the Chamber of Forestry. I challenge the task force to study a long range of to achieve the 2.5 times growth increase that production could be by the small woodland. We have some good ideas for the future. One, they propose by any additional 1,000 tons of energy, the question is to the public corporation. In the future, in this way, small woodland owners who cannot afford to plan for the future welfare of the state, when their own welfare is at stake, to be able to bring their money into meaningful production, and then the owner will be the steward of the land.
city
similar to the excellent idea suggested by Congressman Weaver at the February of the recommendations into a legislative program. All the challenges that the future holds for us and meet them successfully.
Good judgment, including Mr. Pinsky, and I think this is the way to do it.
anybody could do in the film. This is how the president, he has, there is a fire at the back of his spirit. There's a man under any control of the press. There is a fire at the back of his spirit. I just got off the phone a second ago with these children, which there's no spirit as to this. Another problem that's being faced will be faced throughout the city of Chief Show. Dr. Hillstein is one of the points where the buses reach them. And there's a bit of a traffic jam. There's quite a bit of a traffic jam in the Bunker Street area. People driving that way should be worried. There's a fire out there. There's a quite a traffic jam out there. That also means many of the bus routes will be slightly late. And we're hoping to let everybody know, not to worry too much, the bus routes will be slightly late this morning. Another news around the area. Oregon Governor Bob Stabler got a visit to the South Coast today with meetings by the state land board and the Forest Reef Convention. Yesterday, Bob visited the home of David Matthews, owner of the area's first solar home. Bob then visited with senior citizens for lunch and then had a dinner party at the Tony Gillis Inn. Senior spoke with the governor last evening just before that dinner party. He asked whether the governor thought herbicides were safe. I think the herbicides could be used for the great deal of care. I'm concerned about the possible danger of herbicides. And I think that the risk and risk perception needs to be exercised. And I think that, for example, if the people have to be in a forest, have to be used with very special care and very extra protection. And in fact, the Forest Service, who may not be going to start using people have to use them the other day, I prevailed upon them, and now the kids do the Forest Service has agreed to use the same protections that we're using in the state of Oregon.
With the action of the State Board of Forestry in approving a 200-foot setback for the use of 2.5T and Tovex. This setback is for every major live stream in the state of Oregon. It's necessary. Okay. I'm very pleased with the action of the State Board of Forestry in approving the 200-foot setback from the live stream. It's very, very important in the state of Oregon that we use every precaution to protect the public from the improper, accidental contact with these very, very strong herbicides. And I'm very pleased with the action of the Board of Forestry. I think that it goes a long way toward resolving some of the worries and concerns that the people of Oregon have. I feel that our ability to continue to use 2.5T and Tovex is important to the proper management of the forest lands in Oregon, and I think these new precautions will give assurance to the public that we're doing everything we can to see that they're safely used. I'm very pleased with the action of the State Board of Forestry in denying the use of 2.5T and Tovex within 200 feet of either side of the stream. I think that this kind of precaution is absolutely essential if we're going to safeguard the public health in the state of Oregon. It's important that we have the use of herbicides for managing our forest lands to get maximum yield out of our production. But it is also very, very essential that we see that these herbicides are used in a way that guarantees the safety of the people of the state of Oregon and protects our environment.
I haven't seen any editorials yet, but I'm going to do some. This is wonderful. Great news for the people of Oregon. I'm committed to saving the Illinois River from the destruction of Buzzard Creek Dam and Reservoir. I know this country. I've walked this river and hiked in it and camped in it And while we must find new sources of power for Oregon, it could not be purchased at the price of losing this marvelous, irreplaceable Oregon treasure. I'll urge the President to take quick action.